I decided I had to do something that would allow me to make an income from home. And this is literally step one. I Googled, how do you make a product from scratch?
How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is Sinead Crowther, the co-founder of Soothing Solutions. This is an absolute masterclass in resilience and logical thinking. Here's my chat with Sinead.
Over the past 5 years in this podcast, I've spoken to loads of amazing Irish businesses who grew from one idea to become world-class companies, able to compete with the best on the international stage. And many of those started up and grew with the help of their local enterprise office. From starting or growing to become more sustainable or digitization, the local enterprise offices have everything to help make it happen for your business. Visit localenterprise.ie or click the link in the bio below. Okay, you know me. You know I'm massively into my health, fitness, and training. But there's one thing I haven't spoken about before, and that is a product I take every single day. It's a product called Resilience, and it's made by an Irish company called Ethos. What's kind of funny is that every single entrepreneur I meet, that is the one characteristic they have, incredible resilience. So I like that little play on words. It's a multifunctional supplement that supports cognitive function, immunity, which is super important this time of year, energy levels, and it keeps stress at bay. I also love it because it's easy. If you're bringing anything new habit into your life, it has to be easy, and taking resilience is so simple. I simply mix it in a glass of water every single morning, and I always throw a couple of extra in my gym bag to keep them with me. It's a really tasty blood orange flavor as well. It ticks all the boxes. It has B vitamins, amino acids, vitamin C, and adaptogens like reishi mushroom and ashwagandha. So if you want to try it, I think you should. Go to weareethos.com. And because I like it so much, the guys have given me a discount code. So if you go to weareethos.com, enter Gary Fox at the checkout, you'll get 20% off, which makes taking resilience about €1 a day, which is an unbelievable price for building some inner resilience. Check out weareethos.com. If you've been listening for a while, you'll know Iconic Offices have been my partner and home in the pod for a long time now. Working and recording in their spaces has helped support the ambitious goals of the pod, and to be honest, really helped it grow. So I partner with them to give you, my fellow entrepreneurs, the opportunity to work from Iconic Offices spaces and experience it for yourself. No fees, no catches. Simply visit the Iconic Offices link in the show notes below and enter the code GARY24 and claim your free co-working day pass, or bring the whole team with you and book a day office. Sinead, welcome to the pod.
Hello there. I'm delighted to be here, Gary. Thank you.
You're very welcome. We had a very bizarre intro to the pod there. We were talking about all sorts of wild things. So welcome. It is great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. I've watched your pod for a while now, so it's surreal to be here in the chair.
Good.
Happy. I hope I do a good enough job now.
I'm sure you will. Well, if the crack in the chat we've had in the last hour compared to the next hour, we'll be absolutely fine. Give us an overview of what you do.
So my name is Sinead and I founded a company called Soothing Solutions. And the clue is in the title. I kind of created a product that will help solve sore throats and irritating coughs in young children. My background was pharmacy, and I realized over a 20-year career there wasn't a real product servicing children's needs for sore throats in the same way as adults had a lozenge. So essentially that's what I did. I brought that to market.
And I think if people are listening, they'll be able to picture it, because you've done an incredible job of getting it to market. Like, I've seen it in so many places now.
Great. That's what I want to hear.
Yeah. No, it is. Even on Sunday, I was telling you, we were at our shop and I was like, oh, there it is. There's Tonstix. So what is it called? Like, the product is called Tonstix.
Yeah.
So
Tonstix honey jelly pops for sore throats and coughs. So if you think of all the great brands, they kind of have names that's similar or a clue to what they are. So Tonstix for your tonsils on a stick. It's that simple. And my idea was, you know, some of the big brand lozenges for adults are made from honey and they have zinc and vitamin C for immune support. And during that use in the mouth, nothing is cured. You know, cough and cold industry is worth billions, but we know you can't cure the cold or cough kind of thing. You just have to manage the symptoms. So I knew a child-friendly one would have to look like that and do all those things, but be suitable for children. So I put the honey in a jelly base. And so it was formulated to melt at body temperature so there would be no choke hazard. And then what do children love to use? Lollipops, but they're quite bad for them. They're full of hard candy, E-numbers, choke hazards. So I knew if we could get it in lollipop form, make it soluble and have no nasties in it. So it's basically just honey and we put it in a jelly base and added the zinc and vitamin C. Some children don't love honey. can be quite overpowering flavor. So I spent about 2 years working with the food scientist on taste profiling, and the two top flavors children love are strawberry and apple. So we added some strawberry and apple in concentrate form to disguise that honey. And because we also know as parents, children will not take anything they do not like.
No.
Like, it's literally like wrestling crocodiles.
I was saying to you, like, my daughter's only 15 months, and the other night she had her first like major no. Literally, the hand went out. She like just the hand went to the face and was like, no. Yeah. I was like, you're 15 months. How do you even know how to do that?
But when when you have to give them medicines, so say they're in hospital or they need antibiotics or whatever it is, you don't know the strength that a toddler has until they clamp their mouth shut and then they do the plank. And it's really distressing as the parent.
That's the word. It's distressing. You're like, oh my God. Because you're already kind of going, what the hell do I do? What do I do? What do I do? What do I do?
And
you're already up to 90 because they're sick anyway.
Yeah. And you're like, it's in a compelling urge to take their pain away, make them feel better. And so I know it seems crazy to say my little Tonstix funny jelly pop invention can do that, but it really does. And a way it acts immediately is, I've seen it in action. A child will be screaming and, you know, they're not well, they're out of sorts. They don't even know why they're crying, the children. And when you take Tonstix out of the wrapper, it's like a little person shape. Mm. And immediately, like a switch, the child just goes, what's this? Mm. So you've calmed them immediately.
Yeah.
And then they'll put it to their mouths. They're expecting it to be a candy and it's not. And it takes them a second. And then they're like, this is sweet because it's honey.
Yeah.
And there's no added sugars. We don't add any extra sugars to it. It's only the naturally occurring sugars in the honey. And they just start using it. And it's the comfort of the lollipop with the mixture of the goodness of the ingredients, it starts to help. And the parent thinks that this is magic. You know, it is magical.
It is.
It's literally magic on a stick. And also what I realized is when your child is sick, they've no energy, you hate seeing them, you know, lobbing around on the sofa with their heavy eyes. So I wanted to make it fun. So I thought with the stick shape, you know, my son was the guinea pig. He was 2 when I started researching this, my youngest child, and I was developing the stick and he'd play with them like they were little characters. And so I thought, what if we put little stickers in the pack and they could dress the stick up and so then play. So you're also creating this moment of fun and distraction. The sore throats and the chest infection or whatever is still there, but you've kind of just soothed them for a few minutes.
Yeah.
And in that time, you just might get to stick the kettle on and have a Kit Kat or something and have that 5 minutes. And when you're exhausted, when they're sick, it all counts. You know, it really matters.
So where did this come from, this idea? Like, I can see you've thought about literally every single aspect of it. So where did the initial idea come from?
Yeah. So, I mean, I worked as a pharmaceutical technician for over 20 years and every day parents would be in saying, what's for the kids' sore throat? You know, sometimes your child, especially if you have a few kids, they get sick together. You know, their children, their immune system hasn't fully developed until they're around 8. So if you have a couple of kids under 8, like 2, 4, 6, they get these viruses and bugs and they just pass them from one to the other.
Oh, it's often Willows and Creche, and it's literally like pass the parcel. They get something every week you win. They're like, oh, just so you're aware, this is in the room today. And you're like, oh, great.
Thank you. Thank
you
for that.
That'll be home tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
Something to look forward to.
We'll all share that gift. And so the alternatives when I started were like licorice sticks. They were just horrible candy.
Oh, licorice is horrible.
Yeah. And like that was back in the 90s. But parents had no qualms about giving it because there was nothing really else.
Yeah.
Just something to suck on helps coat that throat and it just helps soothe. And then fast forward 20 years, there was like glycerin lemon and honey syrups, which also they're there as an offering. But I would recommend them all the time in my pharmacy role. But as a parent, if the child takes it, it's just swallowed immediately. So you want something to have a lasting impact for a couple of minutes. And that's where a lozenge, you know, it becomes soluble. It coats your throat over a few minutes. That wasn't there for children. And also you can't carry the medicine around. I don't know if you've given medicines to your children. The bottle gets really sticky. And like, even when you put it back in the press, there's a mess.
So, I have a weird thing about having stuff in my hands, like oils. And I'm like, I hate it.
Yeah. And you put the lid back
and you're a fan. You're like, it's all over my hands now. It's a weird thing. I don't know why I have it, but anyway, I do. So I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. And then even when you're unscrewing the lid, if you've used it previously, it will crystallize and it's just all blobby mess. So I felt I had an idea in my pharmacy days. And I used to always joke with my colleagues and say, I have an idea for a jelly solution to this, but it would be an individually wrapped honey offering where it wouldn't be a mess and it suited the child, and the children would want to take it, and that's half the battle.
So over years, you were kind of 20 years. You were thinking and thinking and thinking.
Yeah. Okay. And jelly vitamins hit the shelves. And I mean, I don't know any parent who doesn't give their child a multivitamin in jelly form. Mm. We couldn't keep them on the shelves. And that's when I really started to say, if you could do that and make that a lozenge, but make it really appealing to children, but full of good stuff. Mm. You know, I know it'd fly. And then as a parent, I had my first three children in around 5 years. I was like a manufacturer of sons. I just fired out clone after clone. They all looked like each other. There was one after another. And one of them had asthma, childhood asthma, and he got every kind of bronchiolitis, viral. The other had ears. The other was a chest. It's just a constant stream of, good job, I worked in pharmacy and got a discount.
And you had the additional knowledge, though. I mean, you know, for parents who don't have that knowledge, it is difficult. You're like, going, what do I do now? Like, you don't even run to the doctor all the time either.
Yeah, and so sometimes you get to know when they need to go to the doctor. And otherwise, you know, this is just brewing. I just need something across the counter to manage this till it passes. And you get good at knowing, you just by looking at your child, you know when they need to see a doctor. So all that parental experience and then, you know, pharmacy sector experience, to me it was obvious what needed to be done. And so my circumstances changed at home, and I decided probably it was now or never to try and pursue this as an idea.
What was the first step? Because that's the one I love exploring with people. The zero to one piece is always the piece that I find magic. There's kind of two landmarks I think of, like the zero to one, where you go from nothing, you take it out of your head, into your heart, into your hands, and into physical. And then the other one is when you get your first 10 customers. So I think they're the first two milestones. So take me through the zero to one piece.
So the zero day one piece was my son had an accident and we were just out of the hospital. And I was terrified to go back to work. I thought if I left, something would happen to them all. So it was a really hard time for me. I was in a bad place. You know, I felt guilty. I was at work when he had his accident. And so I wasn't really sleeping that well. And it was New Year's Day 2017. And I decided I had to do something that would allow me to make an income from home. And this is literally step one. I Googled, how do you make a product from scratch? And I thought, I'm going to make this jelly pop. It's going to be really easy. I'll do it from the kitchen. I've seen people do this all the time on Instagram. That can be me. And it led me to a website called New Frontiers. I had no clue what this was. I have no business background. Like, just want to stress that. Zero. I'm science nerd, loved pharmacy. And I'm just a mam as well. So I had no notions about myself and I had no clue what to do. So this form said, do you have an idea or a concept that you would like to explore? And I was like, I do actually.
Filled in the funny form. You ask.
Yeah. And one of the good things, I suppose I'm lucky in that I was really good at English in school. So I don't have degrees. I have like pharmaceutical technician certification. That's my grade of education level. But I was always really good at English. So I was able to fill in the form, really clear vision. And funny, the end product hasn't changed.
I like
changed.
How you call yourself funny. That's always good.
No. The funny thing is my end product never changed from that first application,
really?
Even though that was in 2017. It was
That's
crystal
so
clear.
Rare. That is crystal so, clear. So rare.
Yeah. And I just hit send and I forgot about it. And then it was New Year's Day. So like the 8th of January, when everyone went back to work, I got a call from the facilitator of New Frontiers. And they said, this is actually really interesting. Would you come in and talk to us? And I was kind of like, I actually forgot I sent that in. Yeah. Okay. I'll go in. And for the first time in a long time, someone had said, you've done something good, because when your child has an accident and you've been at work and you've that mom guilting, and I was on my own, I felt like I didn't really do anything good at that time. Mm. So it was kind of like a lifeline as well. Mm. So a couple of things were happening for me with that one Google search.
I think that's beautiful though, because it's just to start.
That's
just
right.
To do that one thing. Mm. It's just to start, and just because that's the bit I always say, like the biggest killer of businesses is that they never start.
Google.
It's not finance.
God bless
it's
Google.
Not all these things. It's not product market. It's just they never start. They never literally start with that. And it's amazing. The New Frontiers program is amazing. It's an incredible, as we're recording this, it's Local Enterprise Week, but there's so much in Ireland to help you start. I think that's amazing. And you just have to reach out, because no one's going to do it for you. You just have to make that initial step, and then there's so many pathways for it.
Well, that's exactly the route I took, because I didn't have anything. Literally didn't have anything. I was on my own with four sons. One was recovering from an accident and I had given up my job. So I found myself on full-time lone parents benefit. Mm. And I'd always worked and I loved work. I loved the balance of working a few days a week and being at home.
Yeah.
That worked for me. Everyone has their own choices to make, but I enjoyed that. And now I was at home, so worried about how to pay the bills. But then this kind of took me down this new path of this program. And I didn't know any of these things were available. Like I said, I have no business background, didn't develop a product before, wouldn't have had a clue. And I started on New Frontiers. And it was like 2 evenings a week, 3 hours each evening for about 12 weeks. And then at the end, you had to pitch. I'd never pitched before. But I didn't find the pitch hard because it was something that was really obvious to me. Like, why doesn't this exist? And that was actually also a barrier because in the pitches from the business consultants and the corp, you know, the mentors, they'd be like, you know, Sinead, if this was a runner, the big giants would have done this already. And I was like, but I'm telling you, I'm in this sector 25 years. Mm. It is a runner. I don't know why anyone hasn't done it, but there's a massive gap for this. And it's a global scale. This affects children all around the world. It's not specific to Ireland. Children get sick all the time around the world. It doesn't matter religion, race, income.
Huge problem. Yeah.
They get sick. And there's nothing for this very specific. It's a niche, but it's a big one.
That's the thing. Yeah. Find a niche and you have to find a niche. I think there's a brilliant learning here as well because people are always waiting for the right time. When this happens, I'll do my business. When this, everyone has that idea, right? I'm sure you get this all the time as an entrepreneur. I'm sure people approach you all the time going, oh, you have a great idea. Oh, I had a great idea too. And they never do it because they're waiting for that right time. Whereas you've just beautifully put there, you just started. You know, it was probably one of the hardest times in your life. But yet you just started.
Yeah. And if that hadn't have happened to my son, I would still be in pharmacy because I loved pharmacy. I loved the sense of helping across the counter. And then someone would come back in and say, the thing you recommended that really helped. And you're building those relationships. So I really enjoyed that. So it is an awful thing that happened. But something really good came out of it, I hope. And I my sons have seen me building this out for the last 6, 7, 8 years. And now I'm here, which I'm really proud of that, you know, and pride isn't something you feel when you're a lone parent, you know, and also when you're starting off because everyone tells you why this won't work.
Yeah.
When you start a business, I didn't realize it was a fight. You have a fight on your hands. Mm. You're either fighting to prove your concept or to get a consultant to come work with you or to apply for a grant or to get the bigger funding or just to be heard. It's a fight. So if you're not ready, if you don't have fight and spirit or you don't really believe in it or it's just kind of a hobby for you, I don't think you're going to succeed.
And the consumer space that you're in is weird as well because everyone feels like they have an expert opinion because they buy stuff.
Everyone
feels like, oh, I can tell you about this just because you bought stuff in Needle. It's weird. Like everyone seems to have this like expert insight in the consumer space.
Well, I think you have a right to be an expert if this product, you use it and you're familiar with it and it's in your own, you know, I there's loads of face creams and things I will use or won't use because I know how they affect me and when I use them. But I suppose it's harder to take on board feedback from, in a constructive way from someone who can't relate to the problem.
Yeah.
So I would be polite and nod and say thank you, but I will really take on board feedback from someone who's going to need the product or can help make the product or is expert in those areas rather than just like you're saying, they ramble into a shop and think they're an expert in all things.
Those consumer. Magic words. You know what you should do? Hate those words. Those words make my blood boil. So talk to me then, as you went through New Frontiers, what were kind of like the milestones that you kind of went through to kind of, because like, developing something brand new is so tough. Mm-hmm. Like after the New Frontiers one, what were you kind of thinking? Bring me back to that kind of headspace.
So New Frontiers, what it did for me is it signposted the steps. So my brain works in a very simple way. If you say these are the steps to take to achieve this, I will proceed to take those steps and execute them. But I didn't know that not everyone does that. People think, oh, I can skip that one. That doesn't apply to me. Yeah. I will take you quite literally and do all the things to achieve that goal. So they said, if you want to develop a formulation, your honey, there's a number of universities here that we work with that you can apply to. And here's a grant that funds it. So I went away that day, made the application for the innovation voucher. And when that was approved, I went through the list, found the university, formulation began. You know, and that's alongside, I got to phase two on the program, funded 15K, thought I won the lotto. So I'm on loan parents and then they're saying you get 15K over 6 months. So what I did was obviously lived off some, but when you don't have a lot, your needs and what your purchases, they're not like expensive, your survival mode. So I put a lot of that into developing the product as well. And so Enterprise Ireland kind of funded that first stage. And then I had a formulation and then I knew what to do next, which was apply to my Leo for a priming grant because I needed the stick to be developed to put the jelly on. So now I had jelly, but that took like a year.
Wow.
Because saying jelly on a stick sounds really easy. And initially when I'd, this is the thing I had to overcome on a personal level was I felt really stupid saying it out loud. So on New Frontiers on day one, there's a room of 15 people on the program and you do the round robin. Hi, I'm Sinead. And these are all corporate people and they had these genius ideas. And someone was like, I'm working with the University of Boston and we're putting chips into people's brains and they can come. No, I mean, it wasn't that, but
I know what you mean.
It sounded like to me.
And you always look at everyone else's idea going, oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. And they're doing this tech and this is marketing and it'll transmit this from one place to the other. And then I'm like, oh Jesus, I have to stand up and say, I'm Sinead and I want to put jelly on stick.
Have you heard of jelly and you heard of sticks?
Wow.
Ready for this.
So I just wanted the ground to open up and swallow me. And also I was really hung up on my north side accent.
Really?
Because a lot of people in this entrepreneurial world on these programs were from corporate backgrounds who identified these things and I felt really self-conscious in the rooms and I had to get over that. I got over it fast, but it took a while. So working through the programs then, I got the funding, got the formulation done, got over my jelly on the stick proposition. Just want to say, of the 15 people in the room in 2017, I'm the only one still with the business I set out to do back then. So never underestimate.
We showed them, didn't we?
Don't sell yourself short, you know. Yeah.
That's powerful. I know we're joking, but that is powerful because we do tend as entrepreneurs to kind of look at everyone else going, they must know something I don't. We do look at when we put people on pedestals and kind of go, oh, wow, look at them. Whereas in reality, it doesn't matter. They know, if I've learned anything, I don't know a lot about a lot, but I know over the last 5 years, I've learned everyone's just figuring it out. Everyone is just doing their best, figuring it out. And they have all the same insecurities that we do. It's just that some people can hide it better.
Well, this is it. And maybe they're looking at you thinking you're doing pretty well. And
they're like, damn, it's jelly on a stick.
Why didn't I think of it? So that brought me to 2018. And then I went back to pharmacy 2 days a week because had to just pay the mortgage and pay the bills. And I was kind of, I got over the accident. My son had recovered and we were all kind of back to school and normal. And then I applied for the priming grant and that allowed me to start contacting medical device companies. So I've no background in medical devices. And I was just looking up people on LinkedIn, medical device companies in Ireland. And I actually just drew the stick idea on a scrap of paper. And on LinkedIn, I was emailing these people saying, I need this stick thing developed. Could I meet with you to talk to you? And I didn't expect answers. And I would get answers saying, that's really interesting. Yeah, pop down. So it went down to a medical device company in Longford with my scrap of paper. When I look back, you know the way people think you have to have a 3D PowerPoint presentation.
Where's your 3D printed? Give me your example of your 3D printed stick.
Yeah, but you know what? I think it might be refreshing to have such a simple thing presented. This is it. And it's, can you do it or not?
And you're going to the experts.
Yes.
Like, it's like getting a plumber. I always think this, like getting a plumber into your house and going, now, Sean, here's how I think you're going to plumb this. I always think that because I'm like, well, I don't hire a plumber and then go and tell them what to do. You're going to experts. Like you're going to them for a reason. And I think it's when people try overreach and try to be experts in everything that they just end up stuck in the mud.
Yeah. The naivety of me just going in to the medical device company, 25 million euro facility, and I have like a piece of paper and my son's copy. You know, I wasn't polished. But this is what I would really like to share. You don't have to be. If you have something that's worth building, people will see it, the people who know. Yeah. And he sat down and he said, yeah, but the tooling cost for that would be 30K. And my heart sank. Wow. I was like, it's taken me a year and a half to formulate the jelly and do the taste testing with the children and get it to the solubility I need and all that jazz.
Why did you have to build a new stick?
Because the stick in the shape I wanted doesn't exist.
Okay.
So lollipops go on straight sticks.
Yeah.
And during the formulation stage where we were working out how it would dissolve, I was using regular straight lollipop sticks, but it was just the jelly just came off in one clump, and that's absolutely what I didn't want.
Yeah.
I needed something to support. I keep saying jelly on a stick. It just to support that jelly that would keep it in place during use, that it wouldn't come off in one and one kind of big chunk at a time. That's everything I didn't want it to be, and that was a real challenge. And so,
but it's those little details that are the magic, right? That's where the beautiful products are built, because it's the obsession about the quality and the micro details that make the difference between good products and great products.
And this is for children, so this cannot be compromised. This is non-negotiable. This feature is non-negotiable.
And it can't be complicated either, because you can't go, okay, now here's the five steps you have to do to eat the lolly. Oh, don't eat it like that. It has to be intuitive.
They're two. Like, they're going to put it in their mouth and just devour it, or they're going to throw it in the road. We can't predict what a two-year-old's going to do. So this man said he could do it, but I needed 30K. So I was like, okay,
30K,
I'm going to come back to you on that. Thank you for seeing me. And I actually have that piece of paper now framed beside my desk in the office.
I love that.
It's a little crappy scrap of paper, and that's how the stick part came about.
I love
about.
That so much.
And then I went to the Leo, because you can get Enterprise Ireland funding or Leo. You can't get them both at the same time. So I absolutely went for any type of funding I could get. So Prime and Grant was the next obvious one. And then I had to get support in to get a Prime and Grant, you need a financial model built out. So I do everything on paper, you know. So they gave me another grant to hire a financial mentor, and I had a couple of sessions with him. And at the end of that, he built out this basic model that was enough to secure the Prime and Grant, with the formulation complete and the medical device company saying they would do this for me if I could get the money.
Mm.
So then I went to the bank, no money. I had no money. The Prime and Grant is great, but you have to spend the money first, and they refund you 50% of that. So I still had no money in the bank. So I did not think the bank would give me a loan. You know, my personal circumstances, I wasn't a good bet. Four kids and a mortgage, you know, it's working 2 days a week. And I could have went back to work full time at that stage, but then I was into this. And so that's the sacrifice I made. I could have probably earned fine wages working 40 hours a week in pharmacy. But then I realized if I just sacrificed that and worked on this, this would probably pay off in the longer term. So that's what I did. And
there's a big sacrifice though. And I think people need to understand that, like, it isn't easy. And this entrepreneurship gets kind of like a sexy vibe on Instagram and stuff like that. And you're going, there's honest to God sacrifices and graft. And that's a perfect example of it there. You going, you could have went back and earned great cash probably in pharmacy. But that they're the moments. They're the sliding, we talked about sliding doors moments on the way over here in terms of moving house and things like that. But they're the sliding doors moment whereby everything changes.
Yeah. And it takes time. It's not, you can do it on the side to a certain extent, and then you have to just jump in. So I didn't expect the bank to give me, I was just looking for 20K. I'm saying just, that may as well have been a million to me at that time.
It's all relative, right? Yeah, it's all relative.
And when they saw I had the Prima grant and I had the financial model built out with the Leo support, and then I had the use the innovation voucher, Enterprise Ireland were supporting me as well with this concept. And then the bank manager just got the problem I was trying to solve, and they gave me 20K loan. And I mean, I had to sign off on that. If anything happened, I'd pay it back, which was huge at the time.
Mm.
I mean, all I had with the bank at that stage was an overdraft. I couldn't, but I was thinking, worst case scenario, if this doesn't work out, I'll just go back to pharmacy. That's, that option is always there for me, but I'm prepared to just try and get to the next bit of this.
But you put skin in the game as well. Yeah, like, you're willing to put your literal name on the line to go, right, I believe in this so much, I'm going to make it happen.
So then with the 20K, I approached 3D printers, because before the tooling was made, I had to try out all different versions of this shape. And then we had to send it back to the food scientist to put different types of amounts of jelly on that stick. How long would that last on average if a child used it?
There's so many steps here.
Oh, it's so complicated. And then this stick was too small, or this head was too big, and it looked huge, and it looked giant towards the small child's mouth and so on. That took another year.
Wow.
And in the meantime,
so what are we up to now? We started New Year's Day 2017. So where are we up to now?
This is the end of 2018.
Okay.
And so I had applied for a competitive star fund in 2017 and 2018 and didn't get it. And actually in 2018, the feedback was, there's nothing innovative about this. It's a lollipop essentially. Come back to me when you have 10K revenue a month and we'll look at it. But we just don't see anything special about this. And what that you have two options there. You can go, you know what, they're right. Or you can work harder to prove how it's different. So I chose, I had gone this far. And the more research, so bear in mind, Enterprise Ireland gives you access to their Enterprise Ireland library. Any type of research that exists around your competitors. So this is something I learned on the programs. You have to find out how big is your market. I didn't know these terms, your total accessible market, how many children are there in the world, what region. So how I approached it was to get funding, you have to show you can scale this globally. I absorbed all this like a sponge, loved it. Like I said, nerded out on the research. I got onto first name basis with Frank in the EI library. It's like, hi, Frank, it's me again. I need these three research papers. And I just gave him the topics. So how many children?
That's a great insight, because I think a lot of people don't do this step. Like I'm really enjoying your literal breakdown of this, because it's so nice to actually get a full journey of like this, the logical steps, because everyone's journey is different. And you have to play to your own strengths and your own kind of personality. Like I'm really enjoying this logical step. The next logical thing is to do all the research, but even using the EI library, like that's a great resource that I actually didn't know existed.
So the number of programs you go on, particularly for women when you get funded through Enterprise Ireland or the Leos or whatever, there's a program for you to go on. I don't regret doing the programs, made great friends, built out a network from the programs, took away a lot from each one, and each one I learned more. But the Enterprise Ireland library is really underutilized by entrepreneurs if you're in that space, Enterprise Ireland client space. And you just give them a summary of the kind of information you want, and they will go to their database, you go into EI, it's gorgeous building down there, and you go to a computer and they've uploaded all these like 60 to 300 page research documents. Wow. You just sit there with a cup of coffee and you go through and you grab all your stats, and then you're pumping this into your business plan and your business, your pitch, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's like solid stats that have been researched. And it would cost you 10 grand per report. Ooh. And they're just saying, here you go. This will support you to get your product to market. If you get your product to market, you'll create employment and you're helping build an economy. That's crazy. When I was at my kitchen table Googling how do you make a product from scratch, Joe Soap doesn't really understand how the economy works and why do entrepreneurs get all this money? That's why. They're going to create employment in their local community. They're going to then have wages to spend in their local shops. We all win. So there is a really big picture I didn't understand at the start, which you do now. So anyway, Enterprise Ireland with the research. And then what I decided to do then was look at the breakdown of which country has the highest birth rate. Because if they have the most children, that's the next country we're going to move into.
So, again, very logical.
Very logical. It was logical to me, but these aren't.
Do you remember what the answer is?
Yeah, at that time it was. So think of the size of Ireland now. We're teeny tiny.
Oh, yeah.
So it was somewhere like Romania or somewhere like Eastern European country, then Ireland,
really?
The highest birth rate, then the UK, and then France.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I didn't think Ireland to be anywhere near it.
That was 2018. It's not too dissimilar now. It's quite similar. Ireland are up there in the top five and we're tiny for the highest birth rate.
That's interesting. Yeah. Per capita, obviously. Yeah, that is interesting.
And then what I learned was the age profile of first-time mothers had changed. It was now 31, 32.
Hmm.
And they're educated and they're professional. Majority of first-time mothers are now, where before people were having babies in their 20s and just getting married was the goal, where women now it's they're going to get their education, they're going to travel around the world, then they're going to settle down, and then they make a conscious decision to start their family, but they might have two or three children in quick succession. But they want quality products here that are really going to fill a need for them. And that mattered to me then when I was making the product. I had to have the best honey. I had to be really high quality. It had to be something that these parents were going to trust. So all of this information from all of these sources, you're getting simultaneously.
Mm.
You know, you're putting on all the hats. But I really enjoyed that part.
Really?
Yeah. And it's ongoing. You have to still know what the trends are. What country today is the highest birth rate? Because it's now we're literally taking that action to enter those markets now. So that work is really important at the start.
But this is a hard graft. You're 2 years in now and you still don't even have a product.
Yeah. And I'm still working 2 days a week and still getting lone parents benefit, to survive. But I felt it was worthwhile. And on New Frontiers, I had met Denise, who's now my co-founder. She had another business.
No way.
She had it really cool. I thought it was really cool, sexy, like tea company. And it wasn't like your tea in a tea bag. It was like in like tins, and it was really cool. It was all different flavors. And she and I became friends. So she had four children and I had four children, and we just kept in touch. So she went about growing her tea business and I went about getting a prototype built. And by the end of 2019, then I had one competitive star fund. So I got the jelly and the stick together. And when I won competitive star fund, I went to the medical device company and I said, we're on, have the money, let's go. But in advance of that, he had actually said, if this stick is the last thing, there's the dub accent, the last thing blocking you to get this product to market, I'll fund it for you because I actually believe you're going to do it. Because I kept in touch with him over the time to say.
There's grit there. There's grit. Like, as I'm listening to this, I'm like, this is serious grit. Because most people have the idea on a Saturday, go, oh, must look at this idea. And by Saturday evening, they're like, oh, no, it's not a good idea.
But you have to understand, I was loving this. This, like, lit me up. I was like,
nerd paradise here. Getting
absolutely. And no one was looking down on that. They were, it was interesting. I was surrounding myself with fellow nerds and people who got the problem I was trying to solve. So when I won Competitive Star Fund, I'd established I couldn't outsource the production of the jelly on the stick that I had now, the jelly on the stick. That's why I won Competitive Star Fund. I was ready to be funded.
What is Competitive Star Fund?
So at that time, it's renamed now to something else, but it was called Competitive Star Fund, and it was 50K investment Enterprise Ireland give you as a company. It wasn't a grant, they take equity and they give you 50K.
Okay.
And along with that was another program called Innovate. It opened, it's called Further now. It was the Guinness Enterprise Centre at the time. And it was to put women in a similar space where they had launched a product or they were bringing a product to market, and you could just kind of have that support. And I started the program, and actually that was a really good program. The workshops they delivered were really useful at that stage. This is the beauty of Enterprise Ireland programs. They put you in, they're all irrelevant at different stages. So New Frontiers was concept stages. Mm. I needed that at the concept stage. And then I went through to Innovate. I had fleshed it out and I was ready to go. Just needed to execute the manufacture. And at that stage, this is August 2019 now, everything had come together. I was working on a brand, like an identity. And it wasn't quite right. And I limited cash again. So I had lined up a number of pharmacy chains to stock the product. Because of my background in pharmacy, I was just picking up the phone to old colleagues I used to work with who are now buyers for distributors or pharmacy chains.
So this brings us to the first 10 conversation, because this is beyond the 0 to 1. This brings us to the first 10 conversation, because this is really challenging as well. Like, people go, okay, now who's going to buy it? So you used your existing network.
Yes. And this is another really important tip, because I've been talking to people who are at the starting point or almost ready to commercialize. And I say to them, so what's your customer saying? Who have you got lined up? And they're like, oh no, we're waiting till the package is delivered and then we'll talk to them. That's such a big mistake. I'm not saying I had expertise here, but to me, it made sense to have them lined up. So when it was ready, I could kick go, just like the medical device company. So I do all the research well in advance.
Yeah.
If I need to get to here, I need to know what I need to do to get there. That's just my brain and how that operates. Again, common sense, I think, for entrepreneurship. It's a skill you can learn.
It is, but it isn't. Like, I mean, you know, Charlie from Bounce, who was on last year, he probably put it best than anyone I've ever heard. He was like, listen, sell, build. And I think about that all the time. Listen, sell, build, because a lot of people do the build.
Yeah.
And then go back to the list and go, well, what do you think of our product? And then they're like, oh, it's not the market wanted at all.
But, well, that's the thing. And I suppose just with the pharmacy experience, being the parent and then not having a business background, I had to go through those steps.
Mm. So, and you were listening for 20 years. That's the difference. Yes. You were listening and listening and listening. You were an R&D for essentially 20 years in your head going, okay, that's a problem. That's still a problem. Okay, that's different now. Now the jellies are in.
And no one was doing it in a different way. So innovation, I guess, is something brand new, or delivering a solution to something in a new way, like a better version of something. So at that time, the medical device company were on board, Enterprise Ireland invested, and I had a sales pipeline. I just needed to get it.
Was it the same medical device company that you went to with the piece of paper?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So he built the tooling. If you build it, they will come. He did it. And then I paid him back out of competitive star fund. He's still our supplier today.
That's cool. I love that.
And that's great about, you know, still having trade with supporting other Irish companies to help build your company. You know, it's all this cycle, this lovely cycle that's keeping us in our homes and paying our mortgages. So at that point, I realized I had about 350 pharmacies who had lined up to stock the product. I thought I'd just hire a little commercial kitchen, make a few little samples and start that way.
Yeah.
But already the pharmacy buyers saw the value in this solution. And so I would go to me, I'm not going to name the groups or anything, but I go to me a buyer and say they did 100 pharmacies on the island. And I say, would you try it out in five? And then I'll get some data on sales and some feedback. And they're like, no, we need to put this in every store. And so I had a few meetings like that. And before I knew it, there was like 400 pharmacies. So then my little
good
idea.
Good problem, but still a problem.
Yeah. So the commercial kitchen, small scale, I couldn't start there. And I was meeting Denise for a coffee one day. Her daughter had tonsillitis.
The irony.
And she was at a crossroads with her business in that she's real ambition. You know, she's an entrepreneur. She had like an online magazine. She started a tea company. She was a sound engineer. She now had kids. She just wanted to do something that mattered and have big scale. She's hungry, you know, hungry for it. And I said, well, if you're at a crossroad with your tea company, you don't think that's going to get to that point. That's exactly the potential this has here. Do you want to come over to the dark side and make jelly pops? What an offer. And I said, I know it's a lot to ask you. Like, I have no salary to offer you.
Why did you ask her?
Because I knew I had to build a manufacturing company. Because the companies I reached out to companies around the world, again, through EI, these are manufacturers of similar jelly products. Well, not similar, because jelly doesn't exist on a person-shaped stick anywhere. Mm. But jellies, manufacturer of jellies, it's a completely different process. And these manufacturers would say, we'll make it the jellies, but it won't be on the stick. And then I would be saying, but that's USP is this shape stick with this formulation on it. So they were like, change it. But I was adamant I couldn't change it because then it wasn't unique anymore. Mm-hmm. So I went through a lot of that across Europe with Irish manufacturers and they just said no. So then that's when I decided this has to be made at home and I'm going to have to do it. So Denise, I said to her, this is what's ahead of me. And I do feel that it's a two-woman job. I still have four kids at home, you know, and you're talking about setting up a manufacturing company now.
Right.
No matter how much grit and ambition I have, you need to know when you need a hand. And for me, that was the point. I needed a hand. And I had seen Denise over the years. She had great determination. She was so enthusiastic. She'd opposing skills to me.
Okay.
She ran a company. She had real entrepreneurial spirit. She was an engineer. I knew if we were going to build a factory, someone with an engineering brain would complement my science, you know, and she said, yeah. I was absolutely thrilled. And then we drew up a co-founder agreement and then there was two.
That's wild.
It was wild. And
because people are always like, oh, I need to get a co-founder. How do you find a co-founder? Like, yeah. There's no way rule. Like it's generally people, you know, in your network. That's why it's so important to get out there and do these things like, you know, do the new frontiers, go to your local enterprise office. Like there's, you have to be in the game. There's no way around it.
I believe that is the case. You have to be immersed in the cycles and in that part, in that stage of your journey. So if you're going to college to study medicine, you know, you go to lectures and you hang out with other people studying medicine. So again, it's
who you surround yourself with is so important. It's so, so important. It's important in the moment, but it's also important over your journey. You never know where that is going to come into play. And this is a perfect example of it.
Hey, we're just taking a quick break from today's episode to shout out our main sponsor. If you've been inspired listening to this amazing business person and either want to start your own business or supercharge an existing one, then the Local Enterprise Office has something for you. Whether you want to improve your online presence, become more sustainable, get into new markets, or just get that idea off the ground, they have the support for you. For more information, check out Local Enterprise Week or log on to localenterprise.ie and see how they can help your business. Now, back to the episode.
Were you nervous bringing someone else in? Because when was this?
This was October 2019. So I was always almost 3 years.
Nearly 3 years in. You've got a lot of work done there. Like you're almost at the not finishing line, but your finishing line of one major project. Like, so were you apprehensive at all?
Of course. But at the end of the day, if it didn't work out, it was something we tried. My thing is, I'll take a risk, but it's a calculated risk. I knew Denise over 3 years. Hmm. I saw her as an entrepreneur in her own right. I saw her skills. We were friends. We have a similar sense of humor. We're both mothers. So we both understood the needs around that to support us in order to do it. I mean, bringing someone in who wouldn't have a family, they probably wouldn't get the issues I might have and responsibilities at home, where I just felt it was a good fit, you know? So we had nothing to lose by trying.
Were you ever tempted or were you ever disheartened when all these manufacturers are going, no, don't use a stick. Don't use a stick. Do it this other way. We can make it for you, but do it this other way. Were you ever kind of going, oh, maybe I am on the wrong track here?
I felt maybe I just wouldn't be able to get it done, but I didn't ever feel the concept was wrong.
Really? That's so interesting.
I know, like the whole cliche of the vision, it was, to me, I was saying, you know, replying to them, but that doesn't make sense to take it away. This is the USB, do you understand? You're telling me to change what's unique about it. Yeah. So then no one will want it. So then I'm just another jelly. So I never doubted that part, but I doubted my ability at times. And this usually comes into play when you're exhausted or there might be stuff going on at home and you think, can I actually just keep fighting for this? And it becomes like an addiction and a labor of love, like a healthy
serious
addiction.
Serious courage, like, because maybe it's just you going, nope, this is it. And like, I'm always fascinated by what drives people to maintain that conviction despite everything.
I think if you're in deep at that stage and you can't get out, you'd be mad to get out. It's like, I've come this far, I can't stop.
Yeah.
And I, like I said, it really helped me regain my confidence in myself, like as a human being.
That's beautiful.
So it wasn't just this project. It was helping me, I guess, have a bit more. I started to like myself maybe a little bit more in the past. Maybe I did have something more to offer because I had felt like a failure in my personal life and I didn't have any money in the bank and I was 40 at this stage. You know, and it's not what you imagine or where you imagine you're going to be. So it was so much more than just building out the product. On a personal front for me, it was so much more than that. I just enjoyed it. I enjoyed meeting new people. When you're a lone parent, you tend to lock yourself away. There's shame and you're afraid to ask for help because people think, oh, she's not coping. Mm-hmm. She's not coping well. Look at her. And so you don't ask. And the funny thing about this was people say, well, you found it really hard to ask for help. Was it the same when you started your business? Complete opposite. Mm. Because to allow me to continue, I knew I didn't know a lot. And in order to continue, I had to ask everything. I had to ask people all of the time or else I couldn't get to the next part. So asking people for the business was no problem. Like I said, I would just Google the CEO of like this company. And I suppose being naive about the status around that helped me like just completely reach out to them as an unknown person and say, do you fancy a coffee? I need to talk to you about this. Looking back. And they responded. And a lot of times they would say, it's actually a pleasure to meet someone at this stage. No one would say, I don't get messages like that now, because they'd be vetted and they'd go through the assistant or something.
Yeah.
And I suppose part of being an entrepreneur is just being a total chancer. What can they say? No. And if they say no, okay.
Thank you for sharing that.
Knock on the other door then.
Thank you for sharing that part of the journey, because that takes incredible honesty. And thanks for being so open about it, because I often hear stories, oh, we developed the product and then we did this and this and this. Very few people, maybe they don't have the self-awareness to understand what really was driving them. So it's really refreshing to hear someone actually go, it was much bigger than building a product. It was about me. It was about myself.
Well, that was the case for me anyway. You know, so when Tonsticks is on the shelf, it's pride, I feel, that I was able to, despite my own doubts about myself, secure the grants. Pursue the CEO, get Denise to join me. When we became a twosome, everything changed because we'd all her skills. And then she just, I don't know if she's more obsessed with this than I am now, you know, because the potential. And I would say we're a dynamic team because look what we've achieved now together. Mm. And there's no shame in saying, I need help with that. What's the shame in that? You know, you can't be trying to do it all the time. And also, I wanted to be still present for my children. You can very easily get sucked in.
Because it's all consuming. Like, yeah. It's building a business is all consuming. So it's even more remarkable that you're able to find that balance while still going after it as hard as you are.
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably a bit of madness, but an addiction.
It's definitely a bit of madness. It is an addiction. So Denise comes on board. When did you get the first product on shelf? Talk to me about that moment.
So poor Denise came on board October 2019, and we were trying to link in with Chagisk to unlock the manufacturing piece at a bigger scale. So she kind of knew she was coming in at the stage where we were trying to commercialize this, had to figure out how to mass produce the product. So that's where she came in at. Like, it was a hard stage.
So you had the stick.
Yeah.
But now you'd actually start a manufacturing company on top of this.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And so that was the challenging part. So you have a concept that's never been tested. This doesn't exist that you can compare it, like anyone could compare it to. And she's bought into this now. She fully knows the need. She believes in what I'm doing. And she feels she can add value here now. And so we got on a program with Enterprise Ireland called Foodworks. And it was the first food specific program we were on. So I guess Air Product Ton Sticks, it's essentially honey in a jelly base with zinc. It's fortified with zinc and vitamin C. That's food. But I was placing it in the pharmacy sector because that's where parents go when their children, especially when they're young, they go for advice. So you know your child doesn't need to see the GP, but you want someone you trust to recommend something. You don't want to cause harm. And I knew that journey and I knew that's where we would place the product. And also with no experience or business degrees, I knew that would help to build trust. If pharmacy trained staff is recommending this product, consumers would say, I trust that. Mm. And so I felt that was the strategy to go with. But it was a food product. So a pharma company aren't going to help you because there's no drugs in it at this stage. So we got onto Foodworks and they introduced us to Chagisk. We got more funding, 35K feasibility grant through this. So this was the middle stage, I would say, Enterprise Ireland came in. And they assigned us a mentor who was in food manufacturer for like 30 years. Then lockdown happened. Then we were at our kitchen table trying to build a factory. Honest to God, that's what happened. He started sourcing engineering companies around Europe and the UK who build machinery to produce food. So produce confectionery or nutraceuticals, those jelly gummies. Mm. And he set up meetings with those companies for us because they wouldn't answer us. We had this crazy stick design. Jelly on a stick, we probably sounded a little bit loopy. But he got us the meetings. And then what I learned from this personally was how to facilitate those meetings and what conversations we needed to have with these engineers. Because right. I didn't. So that was a big learning curve. And that was a really valuable one because that helped us map out this production line. So when you do a little formulation in a lab, there's steps you take, critical control points, you mix this here, this happens, that has to happen at that temperature, then you need to do this and so on. And that's your plan. And this exact plan needed to just be scaled up. So through machinery, instead of doing it in a little pot and a hob, you're going to do a big piece of machinery is going to do this. So we were working with these companies, different companies provide different machines. In lockdown, we were emailing the drawings and then we'd have a Zoom, but we were nobody to these companies. We weren't like Dairy Gold or Unilever. We were just these two crazy
trying to build a brand new factory.
Yeah. With no money. We were relying on grants. We were both living on a grant at this stage. Denise was now living on a grant. She'd walked away from her tea business. And we managed to map out what that production line would be. So I was videoing, so me and myself and Denise couldn't even meet. So I was videoing myself making the jelly in my kitchen with regular ice cube trays. And I would pour the jelly in it and I'd get the jelly out, send it to them, video that process. Then I would ship the ingredients over. So I suppose their supply chain was sourced because I had to get the ingredients to do the trials in my kitchen in lockdown. So unbeknownst to myself, I had built out a supply chain because they were the same ingredients we were going to use. So
again, you just take the next logical step.
Yeah. So ship the ingredients off to these companies. So I think somewhere in Brussels, somewhere in the UK. One was a lollipop maker in Blackpool, you know, and we sent them all the ingredients and then they would run it through their machines, tweak their machines to facilitate jellies, very different to candy and high sugar treats. And they would video that. And then we would come back to Zoom and discuss.
Unreal. Like
this went on for the whole of 2020. And in tandem with that, we were on the Foodworks program. So we were meeting designers to really have put in an identity to the brand. We needed a brand because I had done bits and pieces on it and I knew it wasn't right. So that program facilitated both the manufacturer and the brand. And the brand, so I had come up with the name Tom Sticks, but now I had a really strong identity and I feel it does. On the shelf, we wanted it to be iconic. Mm. We wanted a child to spot it and go, this.
Yeah, it does stand out. I was telling you the story on Sunday. I was walking by and just a corner of my eye just popped up.
That's great. You know,
so like it does stand out.
Brilliant. And we wanted it to be credible that it looked something that you could trust to put appeal in and bright and colourful for because it's
there's a
the
lot of psychology here. Yeah. As a parent, there's a lot of psychology because into what you'll buy for your child and what you'll get them.
And then again, that's something we didn't know enough about that the Foodworks program facilitated. So Bord Bia come in there. So Foodworks, the three bodies, there's Bord Bia for the market research, product identity. There is Chagisk for the manufacturing because we want manufacturing in Ireland. We want to be manufacturing our products here and creating employment here. And then Enterprise Ireland fund it. So it's like a trilogy of greatness. And we went off and did all those things. And then by the end of 2020, from our kitchen table, we established how many pops we could make in this machine per minute. Therefore, how many we could make in an hour, how many we could make in a day. That meant we could sell X amount of units to this amount of pharmacies every day, over 7 days, over a month, which would generate this amount of revenue. Then we were ready to pitch.
Amazing.
And so we opened up our seed raise in December 2020 via Zoom. Everything was via Zoom. We got the first, like we were looking for $500,000 and we got 110 in quite fast actually from angels. And madness or not, we paid the deposit on these machines in lockdown. We didn't have a building to put them in. But it would take 6 to 8 months for them to be built.
Okay. So you were actually getting the jelly making machines built from scratch, like literally a proper big machine.
Like there's four key pieces of equipment. And based on this level of research in lockdown, and this is the entrepreneurial thing, looking back, isn't that insane? Can you imagine buying a house from a video and you hadn't stepped in it or touched anything? You didn't ring the doorbell. And we're saying to investors, no, it's a calculated risk. But it was because we had worked really hard on mapping it out. And I suppose...
Steps. So like the logic, this is such an interesting story just from a how to... It's like how to start a business from scratch, perfect guide episode, because you've taken every single logical step. Like you're a rare entrepreneur. In fact, you've taken every single logical step and followed right through to the letter.
Yeah.
And it shows you what is possible to bring a little bit of money at the start, essentially no money at the start, but logically build. You don't need millions to start. There's that myth that you have to go out and raise millions pre-idea. And we were laughing about this over coffee, like the whole world has changed now, going, the funding world has changed. And it's a perfect example of someone who can actually do it by just being logical.
And consistent.
Consistent. So what are we now? We're up to
December 2020 and I was pitching at home with my Christmas tree in the background. And I suppose the pushback was, but this isn't proven. The pushback was, and I'm going to say it and it doesn't land well, we're two women who are saying we're building a fully compliant operational manufacturing company now from our kitchen tables.
Did you feel that pushback?
Yeah. The first angels who came in didn't doubt the plan. So the other thing on the programs, it's helping you build a business plan, and with no business background, that's really useful. You might get a template and obviously you build it out from there, but with no business background, that seems like an overwhelming task on what categories and what you say in the business plan. But as you're working on each area of the business, your brand, your sales pipeline, your manufacturing, that's another, you know, chapter in your business plan being answered as you're doing it. So the lockdown thing for us, although it felt really frustrating that we were stopped, it gave us the time to perfectly build out. Like what we built out in lockdown is exactly what exists now in Dundalk. That's exactly how it played out. We had the time. So the time was suddenly taken off the table because no one could do anything. So we got into all the really intricate, fine details. And then the engineers became really interested who built the equipment because they were like, we've never seen anything like this. We're intrigued. We get the same thing over and over. It's true now.
Yeah.
This actually is interesting. And we won them over. I got to say, we won them over with the innovation and the difference. A VC came in then to complete the round. We were looking for $500,000, but we had offers from another angel investor who wanted to give us the whole $500,000. And we had a problem with that one in that there was a break in that December where you could meet people face to face, and we hired an office and we had the masks and we were going through the financials. And his question he put into the ring that day was, are you ready for this?
I'm already cringing.
You two have 8 children between you. Do you really understand the work it's going to take to pull this off? You know, what's your childcare position? You ever been asked that? We were like, we've both had careers today, so we can assure you that that won't be an issue. And like, childcare is an issue. You know, you can have 2 parents working, whether you're married, divorced, separated, lone parent. The school generally rings the mom. That's just the way it is. I don't know, unless you specify otherwise. Like, if the mom and dad's name is on the contact list, they generally ring the mom. I don't know. That's my experience. But for that to be said in a meeting where we're talking about $500,000 investment, and if I am invited to a panel or anything, I'll always ask for show of hands in the room by the men in a pitch. Are they ever asked what their childcare situation is? And they're not. So
I don't know why I keep being surprised, because I hear this over and over and over again from great entrepreneurs I have on, that they're run up against rampant sexism, overt sexism, even in environments where you assume everyone is educated, savvy, worldwise. You know, these people have done well in certain areas. They've achieved certain things.
Yeah.
And you go, how are you so ignorant to the ways of the world? In the ways of the modern world, whereby asking that question just blows my mind. Still, I don't know why I keep being surprised, because you keep coming up against it. It's bonkers.
It is a bit bonkers. And
what was your reaction?
So just said, we, you know, we can assure you that today we've managed to hold down jobs and careers and, you know, and have a family. It's not one or the other. And I suppose it's just the, I'm going to say belittling in a way. It's like, but do you understand?
Yeah.
Do you really understand? Like, we're 2 8-year-old little girls.
Like, patting you
saying,
on the head.
Can we have some money, please? We don't really know what we're doing. Like, you've appreciated the work it took to get there and the level of research and, you know, time and energy we had put into it at that stage for someone to say, but do you really understand? So I find
it so weird that people even get to that stage and go, oh yeah, I'm thinking about investing in this company, and then go to the meeting and then to ask that question. You're like, why waste your time?
Well, my response to that, we assured them that it wouldn't be an issue, and we could, you know, our aim was to balance it all, and we feel we had what it takes to balance it all. And there was 2 of us. And then I kind of said to him, what's your childcare situation? You know, how are you? Who's minding your children while you're here today? And he just replied, oh, my wife. And I was like, I have to get a wife.
God.
So demeaning.
That
you know,
was a
as
hard
well.
No from
he,
you.
He didn't say no that day, but about a week later, he was doing his due diligence and he just said the time wasn't right for him then. And I don't know whether that's why or whether financially.
To be honest, you're the lucky escape.
We
did. Because you couldn't work with someone like that, an absolute dinosaur. You could not work with someone like that.
We did have a lucky escape. And it really, it's a hard blow, because we were supposed to close, let's say, the 31st of January. And he told us this like on the 20th of January. And we had this supplier saying, we need the next tranche for the machinery. And it was the first time you really felt proper pressure, because we'd committed to buy, you signed a contract to buy, the machinery was probably around 350,000.
Wow.
And we were looking for the rest of the money to bring in, and at the same time looking for a unit to put them in, because we didn't even have a building. And everywhere was full or too expensive. And no one would see us, because we weren't manufacturers yet. So we weren't taken seriously at all.
So it was that weird time during COVID, and property was suddenly mental. Like, it was just, you couldn't get anything. And then there was all this stuff, but key money. And it was a weird time to be trying to get anything off the ground.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you're not an established business person yet. Your brand isn't even on the shelf. We were just getting our boxes designed. So it was a hard sell. But we had met a VC on the Foodworks program, and they took an interest in us, and we start, I suppose, due diligence with them, and they offered us the money, and they also brought in two other, I suppose, big players in food and business, and we secured the investment with them. Once we secured that, Enterprise Ireland offered us match funding. So in the end, we brought in 1.4 million.
Wow.
From my little drawn on a scrap of paper.
So you were trying to raise, was this the same raise? You were trying to raise 500, ended up doing 1.4.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Now, because of lockdown, it came in drips and drabs, it trickled in. But I have a photo of myself when the big chunk of it went in. Denise captured me on the company bank account. I went on like Banking 365 and I was like, oh my God. And she has that photo. And
but those moments are so bloody rare. You got to drink them in because you've already dealt with a few dinosaurs a few months ago. You've had your hopes dashed and you got to drink those things. They're like, there's moments. They're the moments between the moments, right? They're the moments where you're like, oh.
But what I love is the contrast. So we had a photo shoot for like the Indo and it's like up against the wall.
Oh, doing the staring into the distance thing.
And I would tell all entrepreneurs, practice this in the mirror. This is, you know, you
practice
need to practice
the stare. Picture what you're looking at in the distance. Yeah, yeah. Stroke the chin.
So we had all the cool edgy ones for the independent release of Securing the Money. But then in contrast, that was the real one. I was in a scruffy jumper. I was in my jeans and my runners. My hair is scraped up in the hun bun. And she just got me. I was like, oh my God. And it's just like, we love the contrast of that. Yeah. What you don't
reality.
See.
Yeah.
So that's really how we started. We secured a unit in Dundalk. It was an old brewery and it was wrecked. Literally wrecked. There was a flood on the ground. It had no gas, no phone line, no Wi-Fi. The landlord said he was trying to rejuvenate this part of the business park. And
it's a great word.
Get rejuvenate. He gave it to us at like a really affordable price. That was really the only part of the decision we needed, you know, to hear to make the decision.
You're like, close enough.
We can afford it.
Yeah.
Again, we're building a manufacturing company that's manufacturing products for children. So the standard might be here, but we wanted it here.
Yeah.
We wanted to be something we would be happy giving our children to. So then we went about, the money was secured. We went about renovating the building. We had to gut it. Like there was spray on the wall and a moped in the building, just a dumping ground. So the landlord got it up to kind of a basic standard where he plastered it, put in dividing walls. We put a little office in, a little canteen. And then the rest of the space was for the manufacturing line and the warehouse. And
you really do things the hard way, don't you?
I mean, it's really, like a challenge.
You love a challenge.
And Denise is the same. She's actually probably worse than me for this because she's technical and engineer. And so this is her jam, right. You know, and we had blueprints. So we're like, who are we going around with blueprints, you know, bringing home the blueprints. And it's
right,
all
the big tube just carrying around.
Let's have a look at the blueprints, you know. And
so
you know,
when was the first product rolling off the line?
First product rolled off the line, April 2022. So when the machines arrived in, so lots of things happened in 2021. Do you remember that big cargo ship blocked?
Yeah, sure do.
And the canal and everything was stuck on the ships. Then, so the machinery came from around the world. Airs was on hold in a port somewhere because the shipping containers were in short supply because of the backlog. So it took what should have taken 6 months to arrive, took nearly 12. And all the time we were just building out the brand identity, setting up that sales pipeline, like really securing the deals. We secured a distributor here in Ireland to kind of target all of the pharmacies instead of the first few. And so we were able to go on all the other things. We were building the unit to have it compliant. And then we were dealing with the HSE and the environmental health officer. She had to give us a license. So we were doing all these things while we were waiting. And then we had to hire a team. We had to find the production operatives. The line doesn't run. It's not tech. You don't just have I'm not minimizing tech development or anything, but you don't have a developer on his own and a laptop. We needed six people to run.
Yeah, it's not like the machine just turn them on, they spit them out the fire, and nothing really works like that.
Yeah. So we then had to learn about human resources, HR, employment law. So it's a lot. And you just start absorbing it all. I'll take that one. I'll do a bit of HR.
So New Year's Day 2017 to April 2022 to see your first product roll off the line. Yeah. I have not spoken to many entrepreneurs that have had that level of consistency and grit and determination to be able to bring something together over such a long period of time.
Well, there was two of us at that stage. I'm not taking the credit. Once Denise came, it was definitely a two-woman job. And she kind of is stuck in as much as I am, you know, now. And we had a distributor lined up. So the first pallet we built of stock, again, photo of that
for the book.
And we just have a photo, and myself and Denise look absolutely knackered. Photo, but we're like, we did it, selfie, the first pallet. And then when the truck came to pick them up, the whole team and all their gear, we have video of them all cheering, we did it.
That's amazing.
My gosh, I'm actually getting emotional thinking of it, because that was such a milestone. We didn't just sell one product, we sold like Air Force, a couple of pallets went, you know, a couple of thousand units of this vision I've had for years in pharmacy, joking.
But what a moment though, because you've taken something from your brain and translated it over years and years and years of hard work through every single possible imaginable challenge to see it go out the door. That feeling.
It was incredible.
Oh my God.
But you know what, Gary, the work's only starting then. I thought the hard work was done, because then you need consumers to know about it. We needed to educate pharmacy staff when to recommend this instead of something else, why it's a better fit for children.
But considering what you've done so far, that's going to be the easier challenge, I think, because what you've done so far is remarkable. Bring me up to speed now to 2024. So that was 2 years ago now, almost to the day. Bring me up to speed then, the last 2 years, it's in market, what's happening?
So our first business plan, we said success at the end of year one, when the product launch would be to be in about 350 pharmacies. And we ended up in 9 months being in around 1,400 pharmacies on the island of Ireland.
1,400 pharmacies in 9 months.
Yeah. And then in March 2023, Boots UK knocked at the door. So Boots were really supportive here. A lot of pharmacy chains, they were really supportive because they saw the need for the product. And then Boots, there was a short supply of dry cough syrups in the UK, and then Boots got an email from Boots UK saying, really interested in your product. That's the dream.
Yeah.
Any product getting a listing in Boots. So Boots UK, when they see something that they want to try, they'll try it in maybe 100 stores, and they wanted to launch ours into 600 stores. So when Boots launched, and it takes 6 months, the lead time to get on shelf from the conversation, the first conversation is 6 months. We went into 600 Boots stores September 2023.
Wow.
And then a competitor of theirs, another big pharmacy chain, when they saw Boots, they said, we want to put you in 300 stores. So now we're in 900 stores in the UK.
It's class.
Like, your goal in the UK is 100 or 200 stores. We realized pharmacy in Ireland is small. It was great to test the market here. But a lot of parents don't necessarily go into the pharmacy. They might pick up their Calpol in their weekly grocery shop. So we need to kind of branch out now to reach more consumers in the grocery retail space. So we secured a listing with Lidl just to buy in for their child and baby events this year.
That's where I saw it on Sunday, yeah.
We're working with another, I'm going to say, major grocery player to go into that one. And very short, in a number of weeks. And then health stores. Health stores is a big target for us, because that mother, remember, who now is educated, travels before she has her, she wants that premium product, and she shops in health stores.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
So we want to reach that person too. And then we launched on Amazon UK in 2023 as well. And it was kind of a slow burner. We didn't really put a lot behind it. It was just a test, because Amazon is a beast on its own, and it takes a lot of time. But that's just ramped up now in the last kind of couple of months. So there's just a few changes you need to make all the time. You have to evolve. When you're in the market, it doesn't end there. You're looking at competitors, the pricing. Can we do anything better? Does the pack need to be different? Can you fit more on a shelf? That type of thing is always ongoing.
Tweaking.
But there was another problem I identified in the New Frontiers program. Very early on, they said, this is a seasonal product. So a problem we would see for you is your sales will drop off in the summer. And pharmacy technician head on, I said, no, it won't, because there's so many children with allergies. So they get
pollen season,
really dry, their throat is raw from the pollen. So, and they were saying, but it's not the same cough and cold. You know, the parents are flat out with it. That issue, allergies aren't as big. So I have a point. So I was on a flight to Brussels one in May 2018, and I heard a child screaming on the plane. And I had my Eureka summer market travel ear popping. Sucking helps relieve ear popping in children.
Yeah.
So if I made a travel version from the same line, you're running the same, mainly the same ingredients. We'll just change the flavor. We added L-theane, like green tea, is holistically known to calm and soothe. Oh. And ginger for maybe travel sickness.
Oh, yeah.
Famous, you know, for nausea and things. So if you develop that for travel, you'd then have a summer market. And then that could be potentially bigger because...
That's really clever, yeah.
I mean, who wouldn't want to have this for the child in flight?
Just in case as well.
Yeah.
Just in case.
And I don't know if you've traveled with toddlers yet, but if you have a soother in their mouth, they'll throw it out because their ears are popping. Mm. If you're trying to get them to suck on a bottle, they'll throw the bottle
down.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Everything
goes on the
ground.
Floor of the plane. Yeah. We know we've had so many messages from parents on the plane with pups. And that's that thing, as soon as the child sees it, they start to use it. The stickers come into play. And we even put a little mini child's passport in the travel pack. And it says, we at Tonsilics give you permission to travel. And then they feel like they're, you know, they want a grown-up passport. You're never going to give a child a passport.
Yeah, that's cool.
And so that's really captured the travel market. So we're kind of launching that in a big way for 2024. So we're entering a new, completely new channel, like the travel space, the global travel space. We're pitching at a travel expo in May in Hamburg. And we've had a lot of interest just from the platform already. So
what
global domination. These jelly pops are good.
I'm booking you in for 2 years' time to come back and tell the story because this is an incredible story. And like, you're at it since 2017. We're 2024 now. And I just feel this is only beginning now.
We hope so. We do feel a shift in the last, I will say, 6 months that people really see the value in the problem we're solving and the uniqueness and in the child-friendly way it's delivered. But there's so much more we can do. Like what we really want to do, my ultimate goal would be to add paracetamol or ibuprofen to this and change the way we deliver medications to children where it's not distress, it's not that fight, they're already sick. And that would be the exit strategy. Again, makes sense to me.
Yeah, it does. But it's all, again, logic. You're the most logical entrepreneur I've ever met.
Oh,
after
my
5 years,
God,
the most logical, straightforward entrepreneur. Like, phenomenal. Just step by step by step. And that's what I love, because when we do these pods, I always try hope that there's one person listening that's like, that's the problem we've been having. Just a couple of takeaways in each episode, whereas today you've outlined just so many steps that people can take, no matter what stage they're at, whether they're just starting and it's going to the Leos, or whether they're trying to get an idea to manufacture, or even just the message just to stick with it.
Stick with
even
it.
Even just the message that, you know, if people don't look at this and go, one, an effort in consistency, like it's phenomenal to be able to consistently deliver, because that's the hardest thing in the world as an entrepreneur, to be consistent.
Yes. And then, you know, you don't have to give up your job in corporate finance or whatever your job initially. So those first 2-3 years, I had gone back to work in 2018, 2019 to maintain. I had a family to feed. And I did, but every other spare hour God sent, I was working on this, you know. So you can do both initially, but there comes a point where you do have to go all in. And that's a big sacrifice when there's no money yet. I'm surviving on like 300 quid grand a week. And I could make it work. Mm. You can make it work. I'm not saying it's easy, but there's definitely sacrifices. And if that's not okay for you, if you have a lavish lifestyle, it's not going to be for you.
Yeah, well, then you don't really want it enough. Yeah. You think you want it. You realize it's 300 quid a week and you're like, oh, that means I can't go abroad 4 times a year. Can't go skiing every
January.
Can't
get January. My hair done every 8 weeks. No.
Yeah, it's bizarre. We're going to do a quick fire round now.
Okay.
What book should every entrepreneur read?
Oh my God, I haven't read a book in years, so I'm going to have to pass on that one. The last book I read was Dr. Marie Cassidy, The State Pathologist.
Okay.
She's talk about advocate for women in STEM and not, you know, doing the normal roles. You know, she's brilliant.
Okay. Let me just pull up the questions now for the quick fire round. What was the book like?
Oh, she's awesome. Like, she's just amazing. She studied to be a doctor, but then hated dealing with people. So corpses appeal to her. And that's not something you'd hear
you
woman saying, you know. And also, she's super glamorous. So she's rocking up to these crime scenes, like her hair done, full face of makeup, and they're thinking she's strange. And she made that work. She had to prove herself. So I love that about her.
What's the biggest thing you've learned since starting your business?
Biggest thing I've learned about myself, or in general about myself, is I have high emotional intelligence. And I think that's a really underrated soft skill people don't talk about enough. I think I'm good at reading a person and an energy in the room. And I'm going to say I've worked a lot on myself. So I understand, am I reacting to this or am I responding? That's so important. I was reactive years in time gone by. And now that's just not helpful. So emotional intelligence is super important.
Yeah. It's amazing how few people just do the work. They always react to other people. Everything's against them. The world's against them. It's then when you're like, but why am I reacting that way? It's such a powerful thing. You can always tell the people who've done the work. What would you do today if they give you 10 million euro?
10 million euro. Obviously invest some of it in the company. I would honestly put money in the bank for my son's education. So two of them are in college. One's doing a master's. Sort my family out, go on a holiday. Definitely donate something to charities around carers. They just don't get the recognition and the break they need. And I'd keep about 2 million to invest in female-led businesses. There's some amazing female entrepreneurs in Ireland and they're just not getting funding. And I honestly don't know why. They're brilliant. Their products are brilliant. What they're doing is brilliant and they just can't secure the money. We have to prove it first. They shouldn't have to prove it. They should have the same kind of equal footing that anyone else would have.
It's almost like you have to give them a guarantee. There's no guarantees in investment, but it seems like you have to have a higher barrier. What's something in your daily routine you wish had started sooner?
Oh, this is a really easy one. I wish I had removed access to myself to toxic people. So everyone has toxic people they have to deal with, whether it's friend, family, partner, supplier, someone you're in business with, but either minimizing that access so your engagement is the bare minimum or removing access completely. So I choose to do that. And I wish I did it 20 years ago.
I love it. I say this all the time when I'm making decisions. I was like, everything is a choice. You are choosing that environment. You are choosing that situation. If you keep choosing that situation, you're going to keep getting the same results. It's all a choice. I love that. I'm going to give you 1 million euro, but you can only invest in one person or one company. Who is it?
There's a company coming up and she's developed products for women, I'm going to say, sensitive areas postpartum, after they deliver a child. There's nothing for that. Her name, it's A New Mum. It's an Irish company based in Tipperary. This is one of the fantastic, phenomenal women in healthcare. That's just, she. If she got this money, she'd have much more consumer awareness.
A new mum.
And she is awesome. And her products are going to really change things for women when they have babies.
What's her name?
Marion.
Marion.
And it's going to make such a difference to the world. But again, it's women's health and it doesn't get shouted about enough.
If you just start a new company in the morning, what would it be?
If I could start a company, so now if this exists, don't tear me to shreds about this, but I don't know. So you need to tell me.
So whoever's on TikTok in the comments, just stop typing right now.
Yeah. So if there was AI to fill in forms for any part of your life. So as a founder, some of the applications were 30 pages long. And that's another thing you have to overcome. You just need to sit down, get through it. I'm good at English. I find it okay. But now there's still lots of form filling and it takes up so much time. So I would develop some AI software and I would pump in the business plan so the AI would know everything about the business.
Yeah.
And then you would upload the form and then you'd sit back and you just get the finished form and all you'd have to do is scan through.
I like it.
Oh my God, if anyone wants to do that, please contact me. It'll be a side hustle. I'm there.
It's going to be an first investor. Next question. In your personal life, what's one thing you spend money on that brings you immense happiness?
Oh, I'm probably going to be an emotional wreck talking about this. My kids' sports. I'm going to tell you why. When they're younger, they're kind of exploring who they are and what they like and what their passions are. And you're the proud mammy on the sideline and it's all really cute and it's lovely. And they're a part of something and it helps build their confidence. That matters so much more when they're young adults. So my children are grown now. My youngest is 10. My eldest is 22, 19, 17. They don't really, they're boys, so they don't really involve you in their day to day. I don't know if you had talked to your mom about what was going on in your head when you're that age. And they're very close. The older three are very close. So they have each other. What I find is I drive them to sports and they'll talk to me in the car.
Interesting.
They'll either say, oh, this session went great or didn't go well or this happened today. And see that 20 minutes drive there in the car and back, I get to be involved. And that is priceless. Best money I could ever spend. I'll support them all day long in their passions because I get a glimpse of them.
That's beautiful. I love that. What's the one thing you believe that other people strongly disagree with or find strange?
You don't need to forgive someone to find peace. I absolutely hate that if someone has treated you badly, they have, you know, not lived up to their word, whether it's business or personal, the burden is on you. Let's just say you've been hurt or caused harm by this person's actions. The burden is now on you to do something for them. Right. So I find that peace for me is it's not forgiveness. It's I accept that that happened. I now know that person. I know who they are. I have to forgive myself, actually, because I was angry that I let it happen or I played a part in that. Like you just said, we make choices. You can't keep passing the book to the other person. But if someone's really done you wrong, accept it. Learn from it. But you can just move on quite happily with your life without forgiving them. I don't think everybody deserves forgiveness. Some things are unforgivable, but you shouldn't have the burden of then society saying, but if you're not a good person, if you don't forgive them, I am a bloody good person. I just don't want to. I don't need to think about it. It happened. I'm over to this part now of my life. And I think that a lot of people wouldn't agree with that, but I believe that.
I think you're correct. A lot of people wouldn't. I believe with that. 1,000%. Not everyone deserves it. What's your final piece of advice for every entrepreneur listening?
I would say pursue your vision with unapologetic determination and ruthlessness. You know, if I had stopped, like I said earlier, and someone said, just take the stick away or just do this, it wouldn't be what it is now. I'm not saying don't take on board absolute solid advice. I'm not saying you know everything, but don't let anyone make you feel small because you have a big dream. Because you actually, it is achievable if you break it down into bite-sized portions that you can definitely achieve it. So don't apologize. Just go for it. And don't let anyone make you feel small.
Magic. Where can people learn more about Tonstick's soothing solutions and yourself?
Well, if you Google Tonstick, we're featured a lot right now in the news. Our website, tonstick.com. We're on at Tonstick Pops, Instagram, Facebook, and most pharmacies, you'll see it. But it'd be great to get some feedback if anyone did try it, if they like it, don't like it. It's always good to hear good, bad, or ugly. And we're ready to take on more.
I'm excited to see where this goes. We'll be back here in 2 years for the update.
Great.
Thank you so much for joining me, Sinead.
Thanks for having me. Really enjoyed it.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please hit subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts, as it really does help the podcast grow and reach new people. If you want to learn more about the podcast, go to mrgaryfox.com. I'll see you back here in a couple of days for a brand new episode.